seemed to make my legs function in order to go after him. What the fuck? My eyes are stinging like I just rubbed soap into them. Sorry, Silver, Jamie mumbles quietly. It was my fault. I wanted to start another campaign. No, don't worry. It's not your fault at all. Max is... he's... I don't know what Max is. He isn't acting like my little brother, that's for sure. Tell your mom I said thank you for having him over, Jamie. I'm sure he'll see you at school tomorrow. Unless I murder him in his sleep tonight, that is. I grind my teeth together so hard as I head for the door that a tension headache begins to pulse behind my right eye. That little fucking piece of... The thought is cut short when I turn a corner in the hallway and collide with... Fuck. With Halliday. Her bag crashes to the floor, and her phone goes skidding across the mahogany floorboards. Tubes of makeup roll out of her bag, pens and her diary tumbling out onto the ground. For a second, she just stands there staring at me, eyes wide, surprise all over her face. I try to marshal my own horrified expression, but then I look down at where her thick winter coat has fallen open, and I see what she's wearing. A skimpy bikini top, barely more than two triangles of navy blue material attached to a few pieces of string, and a pair of kick shorts so small they barely cover the top inch of her bare thighs. Again, for the second time in less than a minute, I find myself thinking the same thought. What the actual fuck? She sees me frowning at her outfit and quickly covers herself, wrapping her knee-length down jacket around her body, cinching it at the waist. Before either of us can say anything, Mrs. Richmond emerges from the living room.
Oh, Silver, I'm sorry. I thought you'd left.
She looks from me to her daughter, a tentative smile spreading across her face.
Oh, it is nice to see you two side by side again. I know things have been difficult amongst you girls lately, but honestly, my heart has been breaking that you had such a falling out. Look at the two of you now. Gosh, I have to say, I hope you're on your way to working things out.
Halliday doesn't breathe a word. She quickly looks down at her feet, breathing deeply. I don't really know where to look.
You're off to work, sweetheart?
Mrs. Richmond asks.
Yeah, I'll be late if I don't leave now, she says sullenly.
It's so nice of them over at the Rockwell to make an exception for Halliday. They don't normally let people waitress until they're 18. They must have known how good she'd be. And they're generous with their wages, too. When I was waitressing full-time, I barely brought home a couple of $100 a week. Halliday's earning three times that much, aren't you, sweetheart?
Waitressing? I've been to the Rock, and I know full well there are no waitresses. If you're brave or hungry enough to order food from the kitchen, you have to do it at the bar and collect your food from the service hatch when they call your number.
Yeah, I guess I was lucky,
Halliday mumbles. She scoots down and collects her things back into her bag, while I stare down at her, too many cogs whirring in my head to provide any assistance.
I've really got to get going.
Without a backward glance, she bolts for the door, leaving it yawning open after her. And I realize, more than a little numbed by what I've just seen, that one of my ex-best friends has been stripping behind her mother's back.
14. Alex. The bar's sorely understaffed, so Monty offers me triple pay to stick around and bus. I agree, but not for the money, per se. My mind's racing a mile a minute, and with Silver teaching lessons for the rest of the night, the prospect of heading back to the trailer and waiting out the silence alone doesn't sound very appealing. People continue to pour in through the door as the night progresses, and the next 6 hours whip by in a blur of spilled beer, smashed glass, rowdy arguments, and a few thrown punches. Halliday shows up and takes to the stage. I don't acknowledge her presence, and in turn she pretends I don't exist, an unspoken arrangement that I wholeheartedly support. By midnight, the place is cleared out. The snowstorm might have passed, but the roads are still hazardous, especially after the dark, and the cops are always out in force after a busy night at the Rock. No one wants to wind up in a ditch, or worse, having to try and pass a sobriety test when they've had more to drink than they should have. Polly cuts me loose at 12:30, I head out front, the same way I came in, bracing against the cold, pocketing my wages for the night, and I'm about to climb into the Camaro when a hand lands on my shoulder, roughly spinning me around. When you grow up in foster care, or at least in the kind of foster homes I grew up in, you develop some pretty sharp reflexes. My fist is swinging before I registered who's trying to manhandle me. In my world, hesitation will only get you killed. The fucker behind me is nothing more than a black streak as they duck, darting back beyond my reach. Tut, tut, Moretti, holy shit. Getting a little slow in your old age? A voice says teasingly. I take a step forward, homing in on the piece of shit who's trying to jump me. But then my ears catch up with my brain, and I realize that I know the voice. I know it really well. The secondary uppercut I was about to send flying halts in midair. There in front of me, wearing a leather jacket that looks a little too new and a pair of ridiculously tight, stonewashed jeans, stands a guy I never thought I'd see again. Well, fuck me sideways. Xander Hawkins, as I live and breathe. I don't sound all that happy to see him. Understandable, since the last time I laid eyes on the fucker, he was paying a fucking tank of a kid named Jorge $50 to start a fight with me in the cafeteria of a shitty juvenile detention center. I was pretty sure Xander was going to wind up killing someone before he was released from juvie and wind up having his ass transferred to a legit prison. And yet, here he fucking stands. And it's the here of it that's bothering me. What the fuck are you doing in Raleigh? Xander shrugs one shoulder. Had some business with your man in there. Got called down from Bellingham. I heard you were working here, so I stuck around. Thought a catch-up was in order. Old time's sake, you know. Xander's almost as tall as me, with the same angry spark in his eyes. In juvie, he spent most of his time with a pair of weights in his hands, or at the squat rack, working out like a fiend. I chose to pass my time getting ripped, too, which is how we became friends. Old time's sake. I have no fingernails to speak of, what with playing the guitar religiously every day. If I did, I'd be digging them into my palms, trying to distract myself with the pain while I decide what the hell I should do here. For 11 months, Xander was at my side, looking out for me, ready to brutalize anyone who looked fucking sideways at me. I made a couple of other friends during my incarceration, but Xander was more than that. He was like a brother. And to then have a brother betray me the way he did, so grievously, the day before I was released? Yeah, that fucking sucked. Xander grins at me in that devil may care but I sure don't way of his. He hasn't worried for one second about how he'll be received. He's just shown up, shoulders thrown back, middle finger held up at the rest of the world, and expected me to be pleased to see him. Well, the fucker's got another thing coming. He was ready for the first fist I sent his way. I stopped the second. The third comes out of nowhere and takes us both by surprise. My fist connects with his jaw, landing heavy and hard, right where he showed me to hit once upon a time. Pain roars up my arm like a column of fire, settling into my shoulder joint and spearing up the nerve endings in my neck. Hurting someone else always ends up hurting us too, one way or another. It's the natural order of things, action and consequence. I relish the throbbing pulse of pain in my hand, welcoming it gladly, happy to accept the trade-off as Xander Hawkins' eyes roll back into his head and he hits the fucking deck. I rarely smoke. Every once in a while, when I'm particularly vexed, I'll light up and savor a single cigarette while I contemplate dark thoughts, allowing myself the length of said cigarette to rage and fume, to break bones in my head and set the world to rights. When I hit the filter and stub it out, though, that's it. I shrug my way out of the darkness, putting away the anger, and I wash my hands of whatever violence I allowed to steep in my veins. I'm usually a lot calmer by the time I've contemplated the ritual, but tonight that calm is nowhere to be fucking seen. I'm on cigarette number 5, and I still can't seem to stop my knee from bouncing like a jackhammer. What the fuck is he doing here? What the fuck does he want? And why the hell did he hang around to see me? The Rock's parking lot is nearly empty by the time Xander stirs. He groans on the back seat, swatting at his face with the back of his hand like he's trying to shoo away a swarm of flies.
What the fuck, Moretti?
I exhale a lungful of smoke and flick the butt of the cigarette out of the window. It sizzles out when it hits the snow. Quit the shit. It's late and I'm tired. You know exactly why I popped you. He grabs hold of the chair's headrest in front of him, using it as leverage to pull himself upright. I'm pretty fucking pleased with myself when I note the dark shadow of a bruise that's already forming along his jaw.
If you're still mad about Jorge, then you're being a dumbass, he complains, rubbing the back of his head. It was an Irish goodbye.
I glare at him in the rear view. I don't think that means what you think it means.
Whatever.
He waves me off with one hand.
It was like an Irish goodbye. It was juvie. I couldn't leave before you to avoid a miserable goodbye, so, you know.
So you paid someone to try and stab me. You're a fucking psychopath. Xander grins like a madman. A madman with a very sore head.
You didn't miss me, though, did you? I was doing you a favor. Can I get one of those smokes?
How about you go fuck yourself?
I never had you pegged as the kind of guy to get all butthurt over a little shanking between friends. Come on, give.
He holds out a hand, gesturing for the pack. Reluctantly, I slap it into his hand. He chuckles darkly under his breath as he takes a cigarette out and lights it.
Be real, Moretti. If you'd walked out of Denny as my best freaking pal, what would you have done next?
I'd have visited.
Exactly. And pardon me for saying so, but fuck that very much. Last thing anyone wants to do after they get out of a place like that is go back to fucking visit. And if I'd had to watch you stroll in and out of that place, footloose and fancy free, it would have made my last few months feel 10 fucking times longer.
You do realize you could have just told me not to come back. Xander picks a flake of tobacco from the end of his tongue, frowning at it before he flicks it away.
We all have our own way of doing shit, don't we? I don't know why you're getting so bent out of shape anyway. Jorge didn't even get close. You put that sack of shit in the infirmary for 3 weeks.
And if someone had ratted me out, said it was me who broke his damn ribs, I'd still be fucking stuck there.
All right. In hindsight, it was probably a stupid idea. But my intentions were good.
He clutches at his chest with one hand, dramatically fisting his leather jacket.
I just couldn't bear to part as friends.
For fuck's sake. Just get out of the car, Hawk.
Don't you want to ask me what business I had with Montgomery?
No.
Well, you should. You should really want to know.
I've been running my ass for the past 6 hours, and I'm too beat to be playing stupid cat and mouse games with you, okay? I only threw your ass back there so you wouldn't catch hypothermia. You're awake now, though. Isn't it time you were dragging your ass back to Bellingham?
Hawk's laughter is too loud for someone who just had a few of their front teeth loosened.
I'm not going back to Bellingham. I'm going to be sticking around for a while. I've heard the school system here in Raleigh is pretty fucking impressive.
Oh no. Oh hell fucking no. I cut a murderous look at him over my shoulder, the muscles in my shoulders tightening to the point of discomfort.
Not fucking happening, Hawk. Raleigh's nothing like Bellingham. This is a nice town. You can't just stir up shit here and expect there to be no consequences.
The guy who watched my back for me at Denny slumps back into his seat, wearing an affronted expression.
Me? Stir up shit? Dude, I've had enough of the Washington State judicial system to last a lifetime. I'm on the straight and narrow. I plan on graduating with flying colors and making something of myself. You'll get no trouble from me. Scout's honor. Now, you feel like giving me a ride? I've managed to score myself a pretty fucking sweet crash pad.
My blood feels like it's about ready to boil over.
Get out of this fucking car right now, Xander Hawkins, or I swear I'll put you in the fucking ground.
His cocky, shit-eating grin doesn't falter as he clambers out of the car. I can still see it plastered across his face in the rear view as I burn off into the night, leaving him standing alone in the dark.
15. Silver. Hey, you said Halliday was working at the Rock. You didn't say she was stripping. Tuesday morning rolls around, and I've had all night to stew on what I saw at the Richmond's place. Before, when I was still a siren and still friends with the girls, we wore some pretty questionable outfits when we hit up a party. I've been racking my brain, trying to come up with some sort of alternative explanation for Halliday's attire last night. Maybe she was going to hang out at her ex's place or something. Guy and Halliday aren't together anymore, haven't been for a long time from what I gather, but they still seem to be close. Guy's on the swim team, and unlike Leon, who took his spot very seriously, refusing alcohol like it was literal poison that would claim his life with one small sip, Guy and his twin brother Davis throw more ragers than any other teenager in the history of Raleigh High. I checked Instagram, though, and there were no parties last night. People would have been posting about it if there was, and there was nothing. Tumbleweed. Which leaves me with only one logical response, being that Halliday is wrapping herself around a pole. Alex looks tired behind the wheel of the Camaro. There are shadows under his eyes the color of the angry winter morning. He sighs heavily under his breath. "She made me promise," he says stiffly. "I'm your girlfriend. You're supposed to tell me everything," I counter. He does look a little remorseful. He still stands by his silence, though. "My promises are watertight, not just sometimes, for some people. Always. The only reason I'd ever break confidence with someone else is if it might hurt you in some way. Otherwise, I don't get to pick and choose. That's not the kind of man I want to be. Sorry, Dolcezza." God, I hate that he's right. I hate that I can't be mad at him for not telling me this. Halliday and I aren't friends anymore, and it's really none of my business what she does with her free time anymore. Still, this feels big, important. It feels like something I should have known because Halliday should have told me. And then I realize that I'm an extra shitty person because I'm keeping secrets from him, too. My own secrets, for fuck's sake. I haven't told him about any of the text messages I've been receiving. I've been deleting them just as quickly as they've been coming in, and it feels as though the weight of that single, undisclosed piece of information is choking me to death. Even thinking about the texts makes me feel uncomfortable in my own body, like my skin's crawling with fire ants. I quickly put all thought of them away, tossing the knowledge into a deep, dark, bottomless box in my mind, where hopefully it won't be able to bother me again for some time. My ugly thoughts and memories have a way of crawling their way back out of my mental prisons, though. I feel the heat of Alex's gaze on the side of my face, and I glance at him out of the corner of my eye. God, I've been so distracted with the Halliday thing that I barely said hello to him. He's dressed in a rare white t-shirt with the Dead Kennedys logo on the chest. His familiar leather jacket is nowhere to be seen, replaced with a red and black flannel, the sleeves shoved up to his elbows. It's below freezing outside this morning, but Alex obviously cranked the heat in the Camaro up to 11 before coming to meet me. He doesn't seem at all bothered or prepared for the fact that he's probably going to freeze once we reach school. Not as bad as Killian Dupree must have frozen down by the Dell, but still. I still haven't even unpacked how I feel about the knowledge that Killian's in the hospital right now, courtesy of Alex. I can't decide if he broke my rules, but it's obvious that he doesn't believe he has. He didn't beat Killian with a tire iron, he didn't raise his fists to him, but he did put him in a situation that could have cost him his life. But I find I'm not angry at him. I feel relieved, in a way. I can't stop staring at the tattoos on the backs of Alex's hands, the fearsome wolf and the beautiful rose. The rose represents Alex's mother, but I've come to realize that it also represents his kindness, his loyalty, and his integrity. The wolf's meaning is obvious. It's never hidden what it was from me. It's a bannerman for Alex's strength, his courage, his determination, and ability to overcome. Now, it's also a fierce sigil that represents his unfaltering ruthlessness. The tendons in Alex's forearm pull taut, the roses and vines that creep up on his arm shifting as he flexes out his hand. "See anything new?" he asks, his voice low and amused. Oh shit, I've been staring, and none too subtly. "Sorry, I just got lost in my own head for a second there." It's a piss poor excuse, but it is the truth. "My dad, he told me to tell you this morning that you're expected for Thanksgiving. No excuses." Swift topic change there, Silver. Smooth. Well done. God, inner monologue me can be such a sarcastic little bitch sometimes. Alex sucks his bottom lip into his mouth, frowning as he stares ahead out of the windshield. I do love being wrapped around him on the back of the bike. I love how free and wild it feels. I even love the cold knifing through my clothes and the wind threatening to pluck me off the back and send me flying. But this morning, I'm not sad that Alex has had to put his motorcycle away until the snow and ice calms down. This morning, I'm quietly, unreasonably giddy that I get to stare at him while he drives and think about sucking that bottom lip of his into my mouth. He's more than just a 17-year-old high school student with a penchant for trouble. He's the fucking devil incarnate, come to tempt in the most distracting ways possible, and I'm not complaining about it one little bit. The bridge of his nose wrinkles in a surprisingly endearing way that doesn't really look right on his usually extra serious face. I'm fascinated by the sight of it. I pull out my phone and take a picture of it, but I'm not quick enough. As soon as it's formed, then it disappears again.
I'm not really a Thanksgiving kind of person, Alex says under his breath. I usually try and avoid the holiday at all costs.
I swivel in my seat, arching an eyebrow at him. You have something against turkey, Alessandro Moretti?
Just pumpkins, actually. So orange and bumpy.
Bumpy? He nods. All right, well, I'll make Dad promise to ease back this year. He usually decorates every room in the house with them, but for you...
For me, he'll hang them from the rafters and fill the living room with them from floor to ceiling. He jokes.
Maybe, but only because he likes you. Alex's mouth twists a little.
He likes me.
He seems entertained by the concept. Yes, and you're the only person the dog likes, so you basically have to come. Mom's taking Max to see my aunt in Toronto, so the house will be too empty otherwise.
What about you, Argento? Do you like me?
I can tell a wicked smirk is itching at the corners of his mouth. He's trying his best to suppress it. If I didn't know him so well now, I wouldn't even be able to tell he was trying so hard to hold it back. His features look like they're carved out of stone. But I can see it in his eyes. I lean back in my seat, studying my nails, affecting boredom. Oh, I don't know. I guess you're tolerable. Unexpectedly, the car swings to the left and the engine cuts off. Out of the fogged up windshield, I notice the looming gray shape of Raleigh High School and a number of blurry smears of color hurrying toward the main entrance, trying to get out of the cold. Alex unclips his seatbelt and quickly leans over, planting a hand against the window next to me to brace himself. He's so fucking close. The smell of him floods my head. He's the only person in the whole world who can make me feel dizzy and drugged with just the slightest trace of their pheromones. Case in point, I can't form a single coherent thought right now as I stare up into his dark eyes and slowly, slowly drown in him. I can't fucking breathe. He lowers himself an inch, his mouth over mine. He's so close to kissing me. His lips are 2 tiny milliliters away from touching mine. My heart's wedged itself in the bottom of my throat. I feel like I'm slipping, falling, disintegrating.
We arrived in the nick of time, Alex whispers. I was going to pull over and find out just how much of me you could tolerate, but...
He pulls back, sinking back into his seat while he twists, reaching onto the back seat for his bag. I'm reeling, still waiting for the pressure of his mouth on mine, drunk on the smell of him.
Looks like we're going to be late. We'll have to find out some other time.
The smirk he was reining in before has been unleashed in full force now. The crooked quirk of his mouth is far more potent than an all-out grin. Alex Moretti's little smirks are like gift-wrapped secrets, hinting at what they might hide, but giving nothing away. He says plenty when he puts them into effect, and right now he's saying,
I know you fucking want me, Argento. You're mine to play with, mine to tease, mine to drive crazy with the simplest suggestion of a kiss.
And he's so fucking right, even if he didn't tell me about Halliday.
I heard she's been transferred to some sort of mental facility. Margot, my neighbor, her mom told my mom
that she tried to drown herself in their pool last night. I mean, who does that? Who still hasn't drained their pool? It's an indoor pool, dummy. I know exactly who the girls next to me are gossiping about as I make my way into the locker rooms. Laurie Gulliver and Jade Prescott, both members of the Raleigh Sirens, girls Casey used to haze back in the day when she found it funny to terrorize the other cheerleaders to the point of nervous breakdown. It's funny, but I don't think I've ever heard them say so much in one go before. In the past, it was always, "Yes, Casey," "No, Casey," "Sorry, Casey." There was only one thing Casey enjoyed more than giving those poor girls hell, and that was when she had one of us do it instead. Me, Halliday, Zen, Melody. All of us are guilty of making these girls cry at one point in time or another. They sound delighted that one of their previous tormentors might have been carted off to the loony bin, and I can't say I blame them, really. We were fucking terrible to them. Zen's the only one of us with an indoor pool, and all of Raleigh is still buzzing about her catfight with Rosa Jimenez. Doesn't take a detective to figure out that Laurie and Jade must be gossiping about her. She's gonna have to shave her head, you know. No way she'll be able to pull that off. Her skull's a weird shape, Jade titters. Laurie rolls her eyes. Her head looked perfectly normal to me. Rosa left her with an inch of hair in a few places, remember? I'm telling you, she's going to show up at school today with a head full of the most expensive, amazing-looking extensions, and it'll be like nothing ever happened. This kind of shit doesn't stick to the Casey Winters crew. It stuck to Silver, Jade counters. It's then that they notice me behind them, pulling my Raleigh sweater and sweatpants out of my gym bag. The girls fall ominously silent. I'm used to overhearing all kinds of shit about myself, so I'm not going to be losing sleep over Jade's off-the-cuff remark. At the end of the day, she's right. The shit really did stick to me. I don't think the girls have ever been caught so blatantly talking about me, or Zen, or anyone else for that matter, though, and they don't seem to know what to do with themselves. I pull off my shirt, quickly replacing it with a Raleigh High School Sirens tee, wanting to get dressed as quickly as possible. Technically, I shouldn't be wearing the Siren shirt. I haven't been on the squad for a long time now. But it doesn't matter. A second later, and my Raleigh sweater is hiding the article of clothing from sight anyway. Laurie and Jade still haven't started talking again. The silence in our little corner of the locker room is growing more awkward by the second. Eventually, I can't take it anymore, and I turn around to face them. Zen won't get extensions. She's too proud to cover up what happened. She'll shave her head, I tell them. And she'd never try and drown herself. It's not her style. If Zen was going to kill herself, she'd be a little more theatrical. I think about it for a second. She'd probably hang herself, somewhere public. She'd get a kick out of the fact that someone would have to find her swinging from a light fitting. The color drains from the girls' faces. They look like they've seen a ghost. Both of them stare at me, eyes wide and unblinking, as I continue to get ready, shimmying out of my jeans and donning my gray sweatpants. It isn't until I'm doing up my sneaker laces that they dare breathe a word in my direction. With both Casey and Zen out of school, Jade begins. She has to look to Laurie to supply the rest of her sentence. Laurie doesn't seem all that happy to help out. With both of them gone now, we were wondering, are you planning on trying out for the squad again? My head snaps up so fast, I almost give myself whiplash. I'm sorry? The squad, Jade says weakly. There are two spots open now, and the girls on Casey's backup list, well, they kind of died in the shooting. So, what the hell are they suggesting? I shake my head a little, trying to understand. Nope, still not making any sense. Are you asking me if I'll rejoin the Sirens? Jade and Laurie trade a wary look. Laurie's the one who speaks. I mean, we have all college acceptance letters based on our athletics records. If the squad doesn't do well this year at the NCC, we can basically kiss our hopes of getting into a decent school goodbye. And you, well, you are never captain material. Gee, thanks. Nothing personal, Laurie adds quickly. We're not captain material either, but you were a great flyer, and you always showed up for everything, made sure you gave it 100%, and that's what we need right now. Someone reliable who will do a good job. Jesus Christ, don't bowl me over with flattery or anything. I've never received such a glowing recommendation before.
I don't think so. I've got a lot going on right now. I don't really have the time. What with guitar lessons and, having to help out at home and all that. I don't even really know what excuse I'm giving them, only that I'm totally stunned they'd even ask me. Not long ago, they wouldn't have acknowledged I was a living, breathing entity. Amazing how quickly things change. With Casey gone, the head of this particular snake has been cut off, and the body no longer knows what to do with itself.
Okay, well, if you change your mind, Jade mumbles. Also, she casts her eyes down at her feet, picking nervously at one of her fingernails. If you remember, could you please tell your boyfriend, thank you for... She trails off, unable to finish.
We were in the library that day, Laurie says.
Her voice is harsh, a little sharp. I recognize the anger in her tone for what it truly is. The only way she can talk about what happened without falling to pieces.
I saw the look on Leon's face. He would have shot every single one of us if he'd had the chance. We'd all be dead now if Alex hadn't tackled him.
I nod, eyes flitting from one of the girls to the other, unsure how to proceed here.
Okay, well, if you want to thank him, maybe it would be better coming from you, I suggest.
Jade snatches up her gym shoes, clutching them to her chest. She shakes her head violently from side to side.
I can't. He's terrifying.
She pads away quickly in her socks, ponytail swinging wildly as she heads for the gym. I've managed to sort through most of what happened with Jade and Laurie by the time I've showered and gotten dressed after volleyball. It was the shock of another student addressing me on purpose that did it. It's been forever since I've spoken to any of my classmates in a normal, everyday way that I couldn't stop wondering when the hammer was going to drop, when they were going to laugh in my face, when they were going to start whispering behind their hands, giving me vicious, sidelong looks, caustic enough to strip paint. The moment never arrived, though, and all through gym class, all I could think to myself was, you cannot rejoin the sirens. You cannot rejoin the sirens. You cannot rejoin the sirens. Trouble is, I've missed it. I've missed being on the squad more than anything else I lost during my great downfall. The Billy Joel-loving, Chuck Taylor-wearing, guitar-playing, badass version of me is kicking against the very idea that I might want to become a cheerleader again. It's telling me that I'm better than that, and only vapid monsters place any stock in a cheerleader's uniform. Another large part of me, that doesn't listen to Billy Joel, knows that isn't the case, though. There are plenty of girls on the cheer squad who aren't brainless, vain dimwits who just want to flirt with boys. Some of the girls on the squad joined because they are actual athletes, and they love taking part in such a fun sport. I always envied those girls. I was never allowed to say it, of course, but they were the true stars of the show. I take my time brushing my hair, waiting for the hallways to clear, before I leave the locker room. I have a free period next, and a date with some textbooks in the library, since Alex has history, so there's no need to brave the rush of people all trying to make it to their next class on time.
You cannot rejoin the sirens. You cannot rejoin the sirens. You cannot rejoin the sirens.
I'm repeating the mantra on repeat when I do finally make my exit. My phone buzzes in my back pocket, and I'm reaching to take it out when I see the door to the boys' locker room swing open, and someone emerges. My blood is instantly ice cold. Jacob Weaving. His bag is thrown over his shoulder, just the one strap, effortlessly cool looking. Naturally, he's wearing his Letterman jacket. His blonde hair is swept back in that douchey way that makes him look like he just came from an Abercrombie and Fitch photo shoot. I recognize that he's handsome, the same way you look at the sky and register that it's blue. But I'm also so repulsed by the sight of him at the same time that I almost double over and puke onto the hallway floor. His blue eyes harden to steel when he sees me.
Well, if it isn't Boudica herself.
The venom in his voice is shocking. This isn't the playful, slightly arrogant Jake he presents to the rest of the world when there are other people around to see. This is the hate-filled, spiteful, evil piece of shit who had his friends pin me down while he tried to sink his increasingly flaccid dick inside me on a bathroom floor. I think perhaps I'm one of very few people who have ever met the real Jacob.
I can't decide if I feel sorry for him, having to hide how hideous he is as a person all the time, or if I'm grateful that he has the decency to do it. I roll my shoulders back, setting my jaw, meeting his gaze with indifference. I know just how crazy it makes him when I don't respond to him with fear. I learned that the hard way, with that cold bathroom tile digging into my back and Sam Hawthorne kneeling his body weight onto my wrists, so heavy it felt as though the bones would break at any moment. I'm shocked, I say coolly. I had no idea you knew who Boudica was. His warped sneer is ugly and makes his face barely recognizable. Oh, I know exactly who she is. She interfered, stood up to the wrong people, and got herself killed for it. Ha! Makes sense that he would skip the part where the Romans invaded her city, killed her family, and she led the charge against them, rallying her people and proceeding to make life a living nightmare for them, almost pushing the Romans out of London altogether before they finally caught and killed her. She was brave, a warrior. She was courageous and sought justice in the face of unbelievable odds, even though she knew she would ultimately die. If Jake wants to pick a figurehead for stupidity as a warning, then really, he picked the wrong woman. It's an honor that he would compare me to Boudica. I shouldn't have waited for everyone to get to class before leaving the locker rooms, because now the hallways are deserted. Jake smiles like the snake that he is when he realizes this. I have nowhere to go as he crosses the hallway to stand in front of me. Jade Prescott's boyfriend just told me she asked you to rejoin the Sirens, he says. I hate myself for flinching when he reaches out and takes a piece of my hair, wrapping it thoughtfully around his fingers. I can't help it, though. I am wired to recoil from him. I should have been wired that way from the beginning. It should have been obvious to anyone who looked close enough that Jake was a vile, cruel, despicable human being. But I didn't know any better back then. I was too blinded by his looks to see him for what he was. Back away, Jake, I snap, knocking his hand away. After your performance in that music booth, quaking in your boots and pissing yourself at the smallest sound, I'd have thought you'd be more than willing to steer clear of me. His eyes are narrowed into murderous slits as he considers my face. His lips are parted and wet, a sight that once would have made me daydream about kissing him. It only reminds me of his mouth fastened around my nipple now, his teeth viciously grinding against the butt of my flesh. What, you think I'm worried about you telling people I embarrassed myself? Psh, come on, Silver. Don't be ridiculous. We both know no one will believe you. They didn't believe you the last time you opened that whore mouth of yours and tried to tattle on me, did they? I'm too hot, too cold. My skin's clammy, a nervous sweat breaking out down my back. It's true. No one believed me when I went sobbing into Principal Darhauer's office. I wouldn't let them call my parents. I wouldn't let them call the police. The Raleigh High Administration saw my unwillingness to report the alleged crime to the authorities as a sign that I was making it all up, never mind the bruises on my face and the ones between my legs. I draw in a shaky breath, aware that Jake is moving closer, but my mind is shuddering, my thoughts a whirlwind of panic. He's quick, grabbing me by the back of my neck with a strong hand, and the next thing I know, he's jerking me forward, planting his mouth down on mine. It only lasts a fraction of a second, a disgusting, terrifying moment when he's kissing me, trying to force my mouth open, and I can't pull myself free from his grasp. My reactions finally kick in, urging strength into my arms, and I shove against his chest, making him trip backward over his own feet, sending him stumbling into the middle of the hallway. God, you really are stupid, aren't you? He hisses. You're the one with the fucking death wish. What do you think Alex is going to do when I... He drops his bag. The sound of it clattering to the floor echoes down the corridor, but there's no one around to hear it. I barely have time to take a step back before he's charging me, his hand closing around my jaw, fingers digging into my cheeks, and he's slamming the back of my head against the wall behind me. I'm not worried about that dumb motherfucker, Silver. I'm not even slightly worried. Want to know why? He spits the words out so hard that a fleck of his saliva hits my top lip. Moretti isn't a concern to me, because you're not going to breathe a word of this to him, or anyone else. I've been doing some research on your boyfriend, and he's walking a very fine line. One wrong step, and he's going to find himself behind bars for a very long time. He hasn't done anything wrong, I grind out. Jake's breath reeks of stale coffee. My stomach turns when it hits my face.
Really? You sure about that? Has he told you about his boss's affiliation with those dreadnought losers who run drugs down to Seattle? Hmm?
He cracks my head against the wall again, and my vision splinters, shards of light dancing in front of my eyes.
Has he told you about the little midnight runs he goes on for Montgomery Cohen? Has he mentioned anything about that?
He laughs under his breath, the sound manic and unhinged.
Jesus, under normal circumstances, I'd have my father pin something on the bastard. Something that couldn't be swept under the rug in a court of law. But I don't even fucking need to this time. There's plenty of legit ammunition to hand. So you, Silver Parisi, you're gonna keep your dirty little mouth shut, and I'm gonna do whatever the hell I like. Understand?
The pain in the back of my head is breathtaking.
Do you understand?
Jake spits. Maybe I nod. I don't think I do. Perhaps it's my dumb silence that Jake accepts as my agreement. He smiles broadly, flashing his perfectly straight white teeth, and ice flows through my veins.
Good. Now that we've got that ironed out, why don't you and I find somewhere a little more private to talk, hmm? Wouldn't want someone stumbling across us and coming to the wrong conclusion now, would we?
He fists my hair, using all his strength to pull me forward, and then he smashes my head back against the wall one last time. A scream builds in the back of my throat, but I'm so dazed, so stunned by the fireworks exploding in my skull that I can't force it out. My legs barely keep me upright as Jake, still holding onto a fistful of my hair, begins to drag me toward the door of the boys' locker rooms. No! Even through the panic and the pain, I know Jake can't be allowed to drag me through that door. If he does, he'll be able to take his time with me, do whatever he pleases, and no one will find us for hours. An electric current jolts me, bringing me back to my senses. All of the nights I've lain awake in my bed, wondering if I could have fought back harder in Leon's bathroom, if I could have screamed louder, if I could have done anything different to prevent what came next. All of those long hours come crashing down on me now, and I decide. There won't be any room for doubt this time. I'll kick and scream and gouge and bite. There's no loud party to mask the noise I make today. I will use every last scrap and ounce of strength in my body before I allow him to humiliate and violate me again. I will fucking die before I let him touch me. The roar builds deep down in my chest. I'm operating on sheer survival instinct as I drive my foot forward, using it to hook around Jake's ankle, and then I'm pushing him forward, ramming him with every bit of momentum I can muster. He staggers, unbalanced, but he's still standing, still holding onto me by my hair.
Oh, Silver. Silver, Silver, Silver. Is that seriously the best you can do?
The mockery in his voice sends a wave of fury screaming through me, and something strange happens. I seem to step out of myself, distancing myself from what's happening. I see him wrenching on my hair. I see the malice in his eyes and the look of cold detachment in mine. And I witness as I pull my fist back and I drive it up into his perfect Abercrombie and Fitch fucking face. His head rocks back, blood spraying from his nose, and his hand goes slack, releasing his hold on me. I seize the opportunity and throw another punch. This time the blow lands on his jaw, and pain fires up my arm, burning in my wrist. My form might not have been the best, but I had surprise on my side. Jake topples sideways, still very conscious, but visibly a little stupefied by what I've done.
Good.
The smart thing to do would be to run, but I'm not thinking clearly. I clamber up on top him, straddling his chest, and I bring my fists down on his head, putting everything I've got behind the punches. The skin across my knuckles splits, pain and sheer insanity cycle around my body, pushing me on, encouraging me to keep on hitting him. Jake tries to grab hold of my wrists. He manages to grab one of them, my left, but I still have my right free. I clench my fist extra tight and drive it down one last time. Jake lets out a strangled shout, and then I'm flying backward away from him, skidding across the other side of the hallway. He's kicked me off him. I sit up quickly, ready to launch myself at him, but he's not even looking at me. He's propping himself up on one hand, blotting at his nose with the back of his hand. His Letterman jacket is covered in blood, as is the front of his white t-shirt. For a second, he stares down at the back of his hand, at the blood slick on his skin, wearing an expression of abject confusion. How many times has Jacob Weaving been punched in the face before? I'm betting not very many. Nowhere near enough times, that's for sure. Well, I just upped his tally by a good 20 times or so. I'm bracing for the explosion. It's coming any second. Jake's going to jump to his feet and fly at me. He's going to fucking kill me when he gets his hands on me. But then, down the hallway, a door opens, and Mr. French peers down the hall, squinting at us.
Hey, what the hell are you two doing? Stay right there.
Jake and I stare at one another. A message of mutual hatred passes between us, so thick and foul that it chokes the life out of me. Jake breaks the exchange first, baring his blood-coated teeth at me as he scrambles to his feet and bolts in the opposite direction. I'm unsurprised. There's no way he'd want to get hauled to Darhauer's office for fighting, given who he was fighting and the fact that he definitely looks like he came off worse. I don't give a shit if I get hauled over the coals in front of Darhauer. It's hardly going to damage my reputation any, but Jake's pride won't allow such a thing to happen. His footsteps ring out down the hall as he runs toward the science block, and a dead weight settles in my stomach. This thing between me and Jake, it just escalated up to an 11. No way he's going to let it lie now. No way in hell. He'll be after my blood soon enough. Revenge to a wronged member of the Weaving family is a prerequisite of the highest order. I'm not as weak as I once was. Maybe I'm fired up from actually getting the better of him just now, but fuck it. If Jacob wants to retaliate, then I say so be it. And the sooner the better. I look up, and Mr. French is standing over me with his hands on his hips. His disapproval radiates off him like heat from a fire.
I think you and I had better have a talk.
16. Alex. Ben. I don't want to see Louis' Great Adventure on Friday. I want to watch Dread Station 2, can we? It's my night to pick up Ben and take him out for dinner. Thankfully, the roads through to Bellingham have been cleared properly. Otherwise, I'd miss my night, and I doubt Jackie would let me take another one to make up for it. She's too fucking spiteful to be that understanding. Me. I thought you liked those animated movies. Dread Station's a horror flick, and it's the second part in the story, dude. You won't know what's going on. Ben. I've already seen the first movie. It was awesome. Blood and guts everywhere. All of my other friends have already seen the new one, please. I'm so focused on my phone that I almost walk into one of the guys from the football team. He growls, begging me to make the wrong move so he can start something. I'd love the opportunity of a punch-up. There's some kind of fire zipping around inside me today that's hard to ignore. But I'm on my way to meet Silver by reception, and she sounded like she needed me to hurry. Me. All right, fine. But we're gonna have to sneak you in. If anyone asks, you're 15 and you have a growth defect, and you can't tell Jackie. If you have nightmares, I don't want her calling me at 3 in the morning to scream at me. Deal? Ben, you're the best. I'm already regretting giving in to him. Last summer, less than 6 months ago, for fuck's sake, the kid was content to go and watch whatever Disney or Pixar movie had just come out. We'd split a bucket of popcorn and smash ice cream into our faces, and he'd gurgle like a drain he'd laugh so hard. Now, he's shot up 3 inches out of nowhere, wants to watch people flay each other's skins off and perv on half-naked chicks. What the hell was I like at 11? I was tougher than Ben, that's for sure, but I wasn't really interested in watching movies. I was only interested in surviving, and having to defend yourself at every turn, psychologically and mentally, will make a kid grow up faster than usual. I put my phone back into my jacket pocket just as I turn left into the small corridor where Karen's administration office is located. As gatekeeper to Principal Darhauer's domain, Karen is strict about who she allows to walk past her desk. The balding fuck in the office at the end of the hall doesn't take kindly to people banging on his door without checking in with her first, so she watches everyone and everything like a hawk. H-A-W-K. Yes, yes, I know how to spell Hawkins. Just sign there on the bottom of the... Yes, that's right. Now you'll need to take these papers home for your parents or your legal guardian to sign. Oh, come the fuck on. You have got to be kidding me. I didn't give Xander a ride last night. I thought he was just trying to cause shit and get my backup. I left him there in the Rocks parking lot, and by the time I got home, I'd forced myself to put him out of my head.
Xander always was good at riling people up. He's never been afraid of stretching the truth a little in order to get a rise out of them, which is why it's such a shock to see him standing at Karen's window now, leafing through a bunch of papers with a studious frown on his face. I didn't think he was serious about enrolling at Raleigh. I do a double take when I see what he's wearing, a white polo shirt, pressed beige khakis with a fucking line down the front, and a red down body warmer. A fucking body warmer? I must look incredulous. I am incredulous. What kind of bullshit stunt is he trying to pull here? Last night, he was wearing a dreadnoughts cut, ripped up jeans, and a band shirt. He looks like prep school 101 right now. His hair is neatly brushed to one side. Fuck, it looks like he's actually washed it. He's clean shaven, and every single one of his tattoos is covered. To look at him, you'd think he was group leader of a church fucking summer camp. I walk right up, leaning on the ledge of the counter outside Karen's office, and I arch a sardonic eyebrow at him. What the fuck, Hawkins?
Excuse me, Mr. Moretti. Language! If Principal Darhauer hears you cursing like that, he'll have you in detention for a month.
Xander wrestles an amused smirk from his face. I know why he's so entertained. Threatening people like Xander and me with detention is so inane and pointless that it's pretty fucking funny. Detention? At Denny, we were locked away, kicked, starved, spit on, cursed at, had freezing water turned on us through a high-pressure fire hose. I mean, that's not even the half of it. Having to sit in a room and complete some random thousand-word assignment on why swearing is really bad doesn't pose much of a deterrent to our ilk. Poor Karen. She's quite conflicted. On the one hand, from her perspective, I've just rocked up and gotten into this new kid's face, and new kid looks like he comes from decent, respectable stock. I should be reprimanded for my behavior. On the other hand, I'm also the kid who found her, frantic and afraid, the day a gunman waltzed into Raleigh and started shooting people. I helped her, calmed her, told her to find somewhere safe to hide until I could come back for her. And then I'd nearly died trying to save the entire fucking school. I can see the conundrum play out over her face. It's quite the show. She'd probably feel less sympathetic toward me if she knew the truth. I wasn't trying to save the entire school that day. Did I want anyone else to get hurt and die? Of course not. But I only jumped Leon in that library to protect one person. Silver was all that mattered.
I'm sorry, do I know you?
Xander asks, crinkling his brow in my direction. Well, hot damn. He must have signed up for some amateur acting classes after I left Denny because that shit was almost believable.
I can't say I recognize you, friend. Maybe you're confused.
There's a very clear message in his words. Back off, man. You're gonna fuck this up for me and it's important. He wants me to disappear. But I don't know if I feel like playing along with this ridiculous charade. If Xander's arrival at Raleigh had anything to do with his meeting with Monty last night, Monty would have told me. He knows I'm a student here. No way in hell he would have charged Xander with some sort of task here without at least giving me a heads up first. Which means he's likely here on dreadnought business. And guess what? I don't give a flying fuck about the dreadnoughts. I tap my lips with my index finger, frowning at him. Yeah, we know each other all right. I believe we spent some time together over in Bellingham. You and your buddy Jorge made life difficult for me, if I remember correctly. I know what it sounds like when Xander laughs. He has a brash, raucous, uncontrollable belly laugh. People used to throw shit at him to make him shut up, because once he started, it was impossible to make him stop. The stiff, reserved little titter that comes out of him now does not belong to Xander. He must have stolen it from some preppy piece of shit on TV. I tilt my head to one side, nodding as I pull my mouth down at either side, the expression of someone who is more than a little impressed. You've been practicing that?
Time to move on, Mr. Moretti. We only allow one student at the window at a time, so you need to move along,
Karen stammers out. I'm proud of her, really. Apart from stumbling all over her words, she sounded very firm. That probably took balls. Okay, Karen, you win. I shoot her a wink. Looking back at Xander, I gift him with something far rarer, a smile. Well, looks like we'll have to catch up another time, Xander. Soon, I hope.
It's always nice to get to know new people. I haven't been registered at Raleigh very long either, so we have something in common.
Thanks, he says, plastering a broad, fake-ass smile on his face that perfectly matches all of the other fake things about him.
I'll look forward to that. It's real nice of you to reach out and want to make friends. I appreciate it.
God, I'm going to knock him the fuck out again if I have to stand here one more second. I give Karen a tight-lipped smile as I push away from her window. How's Silver going to react when she finds out one of my ex-buddies from Juvie has enrolled here at Raleigh, and he looks like he's up to no good? Speaking of which, where is? As soon as the thought begins to form in my head, the door at the end of the hallway begins to open. Darhauer's door. And there, emerging out of the principal's office, is the girl in question. Long, wavy brown blonde hair. The same gray and white baseball tee she was wearing this morning when I drove her to school. Same faded blue jeans and Chuck Taylors. The bruises are new, though. The broken skin across the back of her knuckles, the flecks of blood all down the front of her shirt, and the dark red, almost black, blotted mark on her right thigh. She walks toward me, down the hall, weaving slightly, like she can't quite seem to get her gait right or something, and I nearly combust right where I motherfucking stand. What the fuck happened? Her head snaps up as if I said the words out loud instead of roaring them inside my head. She looks confused, kind of dazed. Over her shoulder, Principal Darhauer follows behind. Behind Cam? Oh, fuck. They called in Cam? This is really fucking bad. I don't say a word when Silver reaches me. I take her into my arms, hugging her to me, knowing that the contact is probably what she needs most of all. I make eye contact with Cam, and I can't tell if the guy's glaring at me, through me, or just into fucking space. He's visibly shaking. I haven't known him for very long or spent a great deal of time with the guy, but I would never have pictured him like this, too angry to function.
Mr. Moretti, that behavior isn't appropriate in a school hallway, Principal Darhauer clips out.
Fuck me, if he thinks he's going to prevent me from comforting Silver, then he must be smoking crack. I'm hugging my girlfriend, not trying to strip her naked. I think my fellow students will survive the impropriety.
Don't push your luck, Moretti. Your stay here at Raleigh could easily be cut short.
He rambles on, reminding me of how tenuous my place here is, and how quickly I could find myself behind bars, etc., etc., etc. By the grace of God, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not listening. I'm stooping down, searching Silver's face, trying to read what happened there without having to ask her to put it into words. I don't have a fucking clue what's going on, but I do know Silver. It's unlikely she told Darhauer anything. She might have told Cam, but I can't know for sure.
Are you okay? I whisper.
Her eyes are wet and shining. She's stiff, her emotions kept well hidden from her face. It's as though she's wearing some kind of mask. Her features are all where they're supposed to be. It's her, but there's something different about her. She's thrown up a 10-meter-high wall, and she's not letting anything through. I'm relieved when she blinks, giving me a hint of a weak smile, and a flash of her normal self breaks through that wall. For me. She lowered it for a second, for me.
Long story, she says quietly. I'll tell you later.
She's either keeping her mouth shut because she doesn't want Darhauer and her father to hear, or because she wants to explain things to me somewhere else, away from Raleigh. Which means it must be really bad. If she thinks I'm going to lose my shit, then something seriously fucked up has happened. Darhauer clears his throat.
Mr. Parisi, I think it's best if you take Silver to the hospital now and get her checked over.
Hospital? Oh, fuck no, he did not just say hospital. Silver reaches up and takes my hand from her face, squeezing it. She kisses the inside of my wrist, sighing under her breath.
It's okay. Just a bump on the head, Alex. I'm fine. Principal Darhauer thinks it'd be best to go get it looked at. The school needs to avoid any liability if I end up with concussion or something.
Liability? I pierce Darhauer with a shotgun stare. That's what you're worried about? Liability? Darhauer rolls his eyes. You're a 17-year-old student with a pretty poor track record, Alessandro. You know nothing about running an education facility of this size and importance to the community. Please do not interfere in matters you do not understand. Oh, really? I am going to fucking kill this bastard the first opportunity I get. Despite his atrocious attempt at comb-over, the overhead strip light bounces off Darhauer's bald spot as he turns to Cam.
Were you aware of Silver's association with Alex, Mr. Parisi? Seems as though it would be something they would try to hide, given Alex's past run-ins with the law.
Cam's still glowering like a madman. He turns his dark eyes on Darhauer, the muscle popping in his jaw.
Yes, I know they're dating.
Darhauer shoves his hands into his pockets, rocking back on his heels.
Really? Well, I have to say I'm surprised that you'd allow Silver to...
Alex has been through hell and back. His actions in the past might not be commendable, but I would have behaved and acted out far worse than he did if I'd found myself in his shoes.
Cameron, he dug up a parole officer and urinated on his cadaver. That's not just an infringement upon the law, it's mentally...
He also defended this school against a very dangerous, very real threat recently, too. Have you forgotten that? And the parole officer Alex dug up had beaten him black and blue for years. He was a sick piece of shit that got off on hurting young boys. I'm glad Alex dug him up. If I'd have been there, I probably would have dropped my pants and taken a shit on the bastard right next to him. Principal Darhauer recoils, his mouth falling open. You're a 50-year-old bachelor with no kids of your own, Jim. You think sitting in your office back there day in and day out somehow makes you an authority on what it's like to raise kids, but you have absolutely no fucking idea. So how about you don't interfere in matters you don't understand? Come on, Silver. Let's get you out of here.
I've never wanted to high-five anyone so badly. No adult has ever stood up for me like that before. Cameron Parisi is a fucking badass.
He shoots me a dry, sidelong look as he takes hold of Silver's hand and begins leading her toward the exit.
Come by the house when you're let out, he tells me quietly. It's pizza night.
You got it. Silver pulls away from him quickly, turning back to me. She falls into my arms, hugging me tightly and pressing her mouth to my ear.
I love you. Just don't freak out, okay?
It's only when she and Cam have exited through the double doors that lead out to Raleigh High's parking lot that I realize I'm standing in the hallway, not only Principal Darhauer, but also with Xander Hawkins' prep boy alter ego. Darhauer seems to snap out of his troubled reverie at the same time. He bares his teeth at me, grimacing like I'm nothing more than a bad taste in his mouth. The feeling is fucking mutual. He spins on the balls of his feet like some sort of Nazi general and quickly steps back down the hall toward his office, leaving me alone with Xander.
I'm guessing that was our supreme leader, he says mildly. Can't say I liked him very much. Let me know if you want to break into his house and fuck him up while he's sleeping. I am so here for that.
17. Alex. I was already planning on trying to kidnap Silver for a date tonight, but Cam's invitation/order to come over for pizza has made things much easier. He answers the door, still wearing that dark fury on his face, a fury I recognize all too well. It's the kind of pervasive anger that soaks down into the roots of your soul. It's the kind of anger that will set everything to rot if you leave it unattended. In the kitchen. He says stiffly, turning away from the door and disappearing into the house. Silver's asleep. I don't want to wake her up just yet. I point my thumb over my shoulder. Should I come back later? No, I want to talk to you. Uh-oh, I want to talk to you. That doesn't sound good. Was I too quick to assume Cam was defending me back at Raleigh? He could have just wanted to stick one to Darhauer. I might be about to get the I don't want you hanging around my daughter anymore talk. That would be a little out of the blue considering how cool he's been with me, but I wouldn't be surprised. Darhauer's snide remarks might have made him think twice about how liberal he's being where I'm concerned. The kitchen smells like melting cheese and pepperoni.
My stomach growls, reminding me that I haven't eaten all day. I assume Cam must be keeping some takeout pizza warm in the oven. But then I see the flour on the marble kitchen island and the small dishes of toppings and bowls set to one side, and I realize that he's actually making the pizza.
Don't look so surprised. I've been pretty slack about immersing Silver in her Italian roots, I know. And my mother might not have taught me the language, but she did teach me the food. Come on, come and make yourself something.
I hesitate. The last time I made pizza, I was a child. I was with my mother. She was still alive and my father was gone, but everything was still normal. Everything was still as it was supposed to be. Most of my happiest childhood memories revolve around standing on a stool in the kitchen with my mother when she was in one of her calmer phases and she wanted to bake and cook.
Don't you like pizza?
Cam asks bluntly.
Yeah, of course.
Good job, Passerotto. Now knead the dough, like this. Dig your knuckles in. Yes, that's it. Now stretch it out. Ben fatto, amore mio. Since the shooting, I haven't heard my mother's voice very often. It's like a swift kick to the gut now, remembering her laughter as I tried to tease and shape my own pizza base in our small kitchen when I was a kid. I walk over to the sink behind Cam and wash my hands, then roll my shirt sleeves up to my elbows, taking up a spot at the island opposite Silver's dad. He jerks his chin toward a covered ceramic bowl as he sprinkles cheese liberally over the pizza he was nearly finished making before I knocked at the front door. Inside the bowl, a large wad of dough. The smell of proving yeast hits the back of my nose as I rip off a handful and slap it down onto the marble, beginning to knead it with my hands. Turns out this rote motion is something you don't forget. For a minute, Cam and I work in silence. Eventually, he's happy with his pie, and he goes to place it in the oven with one that's already cooking. When he returns, he cracks open a bottle of beer and plants it down in front of me.
I'm going to hurt someone, he says firmly, and I need you to tell me who I need to hurt.
Oh, shit. This is a test. The beer and the statement. Fuck it. I pick up the beer and take a deep swig, trying to buy myself some time. The bottle's half drained by the time I lower it from my lips. What happened with Silver today? I ask quietly. If you're talking crazy about wanting to hurt someone, then I need to know. Cam's jaw works while he considers this. He pushes his glasses up the bridge of his nose.
The night Silver was born, I was about to get on a plane to DC. Some company offered me an internship on the East Coast, and I thought, fuck it, I'm too young for a kid. Celeste will be fine if I go. She's so damn strong, and her family are all here to help her. What good am I gonna be to her anyway? I was freaking the fuck out. I'd never been so scared in my entire fucking life. I'd already arrived at the airport when I got the voicemail from Celeste's mom that she'd gone into labor. I sat there and told myself that going back would be the worst thing I could possibly do. I'd make more money in DC. I'd be able to support them better financially if I was in a bigger city instead of trying to carve out a meager existence here in Raleigh. I'd be able to make a life and a name for myself on the other side of the country that I'd never be able to do in this podunk town, and one day my kid would be able to really think about what I did and why I did it, and they'd actually be proud of me for making the tough call. Can you imagine that? I was actually trying to convince myself in that airport that I was doing Celeste and the baby a favor. He laughs bitterly. I sat there with all these texts flooding in because I wouldn't answer my ancient Nokia fucking cell phone, and I made up my mind. I was gonna go. They opened up boarding for my flight, and I sat there, watching everyone else show their tickets and get onto the plane, and I told myself that over and over again. Cameron Parisi, you are getting on that goddamn plane to DC and you are not looking back. Don't you dare fucking look back. They called my name over the loudspeakers, said I had 5 minutes to get my ass to the gate or the plane was gonna leave without me. They had no idea that the guy they were waiting on, holding up the whole flight, was the guy with the backpack at his feet sitting on the chairs in front of the check-in desk, staring at that walkway down to the plane like it was the gates of hell itself. With a minute to spare, I got up, grabbed my bag, and gave the woman my ticket. She ushered me through, told me I'd barely made it. But my feet wouldn't fucking carry me forward down that walkway. Celeste and I hadn't found out if we were having a girl or a boy. Early in the pregnancy, it was easier to be less scared. I'd even been a little excited. The idea of that kind of surprise appealed to me. But standing in that airport, about to leave forever, I realized that I hadn't even seen my child's face. I didn't know who it was I was leaving behind. And that hit me right here, he says, thumping the center of his chest with his fist. If I left then, I'd never know. Celeste would tell me if it was a boy or a girl. She'd let me know what she'd called it. She might even send me pictures after a while, when she was less angry and less hurt. But I would never get to truly know that child, and I couldn't bear that thought. It fucking crushed me. I went 20 over the speed limit the entire way back to Raleigh. I arrived at the airport just in time for the birth. Celeste never even knew how close I came to abandoning her. I never told her. She was just so grateful that I was there when the time came that, I don't know, it seemed cruel to tell her that I'd almost left. Then, Silver, she came into the world with this strange little frown on her face, like she was so damn confused by what had just happened to her. She screamed when she realized that she wasn't in her safe, warm little cocoon anymore, and I mean screamed. The nurses couldn't get her to stop. She didn't even stop when they put her on Celeste's chest. She howled and screeched the entire time until the nurse took her from her mom and handed her to me. I'd never held anything so tiny, so fragile before. My heart was beating out of my fucking chest when I looked down at her little face. She opened her eyes. She saw me, and I saw her. And it felt like the world was snapping into focus for the first time in my life. Really into focus, like I could finally see what was important. And it was the tiny little girl looking up at me like I'd hung the goddamn moon. She stopped crying immediately, and we just stared at each other for the longest time, wondering who the hell the other person was. One of the midwives took a look at her, all bundled up in her blankets, and said, "There you go. She just needed her daddy, is all." And that fucking killed me. This child, this helpless infant that I already adored and worshipped more than life itself, I'd almost walked away from her, and she'd needed me. I made a vow right there and then that I'd never leave her. I'd never not be there if she needed me in the future. I'd always protect and care for her, and I feel like I've done a pretty fucking good job at that, Alex. Up until this year, I've been everything I swore I'd be to her. Her protector, her champion, her provider. The one person she can turn to when she's hurt or sad. But something happened. And now everything is seriously, royally fucked up. And I didn't take care of my daughter when she needed me, Alex. I can't begin to tell you what that does to